Very good. Righto. So I'm Carolyn, and as the on the PowerPoint there, I am a registered FPMT teacher, Carolyn Mason, and this is the 13th year that I've been presenting the Forum Measurable Attitudes course. And now I know Stephen's name and Chad's name. I know your face, but I've forgotten your name. Karen and Lavina. And of course, Tina. So, welcome everybody, and it's a great joy for me to be presenting this. And we've called it this time Uncertain Times because, goodness me, are we living in uncertain times, which will create some range of emotions and feelings and attitudes in people. And what we've called it is practices for calm, kindness, and compassion. And it is using the four immeasurable attitudes of equanimity. And it will, first of all, why the four immeasurable attitudes is what one needs to ask. And as Kathleen McDonald, who's with that book of hers, which covers all four of them, not just compassion, has really been an advocate and a champion within the FPMT with promoting the four immeasurable attitudes. And as she says there, it's one of the most powerful and beautiful methods found in Buddha's teaching for transforming our mind. Is the practice of the four immeasurable attitudes, essential ingredients for our own happiness, peace of mind, and health, as well as beneficial, satisfying relationships and interactions. And that's what we're going to explore in this course of just how we can use those attitudes in that way. Each week will be complete in itself, but there'll be key points and in the next week's review, and we'll then after a little time we'll have a calming meditation. We'll do one of the practices, learn about sort of one of the attitudes as our practices for uncertain times, do an analytical meditation on that attitude, and then talk about the attitude in action. Because if we're going to bring these attitudes into our life, guess who has to do the work of doing that? Who has to work with your own mind? You do, don't you? The Buddha said very wisely, "I can show you the path, but you have to do the work." And then hopefully in person and online, participants will have discussion. And I guess in due course, we'll just check. Is anyone online beside you, Miffy? No, doesn't seem. Okay. I know there will be next week.
Not yet. Not yet, Carolyn.
Not yet, that's fine. So the attitudes are the loving kindness for all sentient beings have happiness and its causes. Compassion, may all sentient beings be free of suffering and its causes. And then joy, may all sentient beings never be separated from the happiness that knows no suffering. And then equanimity, may all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from bias, attachment, and anger, holding some close and others distant. Now, this is the short version. There's also a long version, and when you get the handout, which I've prepared, which is the handout is a fairly comprehensive and dense book about what the courses are going to cover, each class will cover. And so in there, it says that with the four immeasurable attitudes, that there is a long version of them, and with the using loving kindness as an example, it says that how wonderful it would be if all sentient beings had happiness and its causes. May they have happiness and its causes. I myself will cause them to have happiness and its causes. Please guide me to be able to do this. So, what do you think that sense that one there means that I myself will cause them to have happiness? It's about us. Yes, us becoming Buddhas, that might be a long project, but in the meantime, it's saying that to become a Buddha takes day by day, lifetime by lifetime, but each day by day we can adopt practices and actions which take responsibility for ourselves developing these attitudes and putting them into practice, as well as encouraging and supporting others to do so. So it's with seeing the four immeasurable attitudes in this long version and having that line that, you know, we are going to really be focusing on in this course about really what can I do. So the approach that we're going to take is to know what the four immeasurable attitudes are that we want to bring into our life. The second one, how we apply them with the five forces. And I've introduced the five forces this year as a way to be practical and to provide the five ways that we can work with implementing these attitudes in our practice, and to really bring to the fore an awareness of what we think, what we say, and what we do, and try and really emphasize that for us all, and to be, you know, to identify the benefits of the practice and be optimistic. And neuroscience is the way that we can be optimistic, that we can transform. So the five forces that I talked about come from the Buddhist tradition, and the form of them that I have in the handout comes from His Holiness, where he says, you know, the importance of the practice of the five forces in developing bodhicitta. But these four immeasurable attitudes are steps in developing bodhicitta, so they equally apply to the four immeasurable attitudes. And the first one is about intention. And intention is a state of mind where is a mental factor, how we direct our mind with intention. And it is one of the, and with intention, we then say we're going to direct our mind with compassion, loving kindness, equanimity, and joy. And it is what they call in Buddhism one of the most important mental factors, to direct our mind with this. We need to be familiar with the attitudes, and with these attitudes we need to understand, well, use them as a measure to identify what actions we need to develop and adopt, and what actions we need to abandon, let go of, that are not in line with compassion or equanimity or kindness, and have then the aspiration to continue, rejoice at our efforts and continue. So in Buddhism, the Buddhism, as you may be aware, is very keen on having analogies, and the mind and mental factors have these analogies. So the mind is non-physical, it's clear, knowing, and aware. And they talk about it like sky, where clouds go. You look at the sky, clouds will come across and go across, but the sky is still there. They don't change the sky, do they? It's still there. And mental factors, so when you say that the mental factor of intention directs the mind, what is the factor it directs the mind with? They could be negative or positive. And so mental factors are seen as aspects that engage your mind, and they act in the same way that just one mere drop of colour of water, it's the mere drop of water, no, it's, I should say that should be a mere drop of colour, colours the water, a whole glass of water, sorry about that. But you can see from the picture what it's trying to say. And so it just one, that's true, isn't it? Just one little drop colours the whole water. So one teeny drop of anger or hatred, and it just colours the mind and how it engages with an object. So what we're going to do is just do a very short meditation on the considering this analogy of the mind like the sky. And this is also to highlight the whole concept of awareness and being aware and using that analogy. So awareness is also one of very important factor where just being present, being aware, because if you're going to understand what are the actions that you're thinking or saying or doing, how many times do you say something and it just comes out? You're just sort of not always aware that, oh, where did that come from? It just came out. So this is about also developing awareness as a very important way of getting control back of what you think, what you do, and what you say. So we sit comfortably in a relaxed position, your back tall but not stiff, and allow your eyes to either gently close or to have them rest with a soft gaze, as they say, down the nose. And yes, please get a cushion under your feet to try and have your feet flat on the floor, or a cushion behind your back to get that straight spine. And now just allow your breathing, just take note of your breathing coming in to your body and going out. Just be aware, awareness of your breathing. Don't try and change it. Just as it comes in and as it goes out. Just the simple rhythm of your breath. And then gently shift your attention away from the breath to being aware of sounds around you. Could be loud sounds, soft sounds, near or far. And listening to those sounds, notice how they come and they go. They arise and pass away without needing to judge. We'll label them, just awareness. And then being in this awareness, begin to notice whether thoughts or feelings arise, memories or plans or daydreams or feelings. Just observe and be aware that they arise. They may just float away. Don't get caught up by them. Acknowledge them and just let them come and go freely. They are simply mental events arising within the vast space of your awareness, an awareness of the mind, an awareness of the mind that's like a vast blue sky. And across that blue sky, clouds float by. They come and they go. Through the spaciousness of the sky. And our minds are clear and aware and spacious like the sky. And then the clouds float across. They can be like mental factors. They'll have an influence But just let them float by. Let them pass by. Let thoughts and emotions pass through, just like a cloud, but the vastness of your mind stays like the sky. Just sit in awareness for a moment of the vastness like the sky that is your mind. And emotions and feelings and attitudes are like the clouds that come across the sky. Just be aware. Awareness of your mind. And then gently bring your focus back to the simple sensation of the breath. Moving in and out. Let the breath be your anchor to this moment. Use the breath as a tool to return to the present. When your mind wanders, to be aware in the present moment. And as we close the practice, we dedicate the effort to understand the mind. So when you are ready, gradually expand your awareness to your entire body, your awareness to be in the room. Slowly open your mind, your eyes, and be present in the room. So I tried this meditation. I thought I'd try something a bit different, but did it give you some sense of awareness or vastness of the mind?
I like the word vastness.
Vastness, yeah.
It somehow positions it, makes the clouds smaller. And you get the picture of
bigness. Yes. Others looking thoughtful.
I always enjoy that. Get the clouds, the 14 clouds, it's not one cloud at first, but just seeing the clouds, they just get past.
And the point is that that afflictions and all that, can emotions and feelings, can float past. They don't become, you know, the sky. That's an analogy. The analogy of the mental factors. So it should be a mere drop of colour. Sorry about that. But you get the idea from the picture, I hope. I'll have to send Miffy an updated version, which has the correct, I always something this. So what the importance of doing the analogies is that if you consider that what we're talking about here is direct having the intention, which is the mental attitude, to direct our mind with these four immeasurable attitudes and to gain familiarity with them, it was important to raise the idea about mind, what mind and mental factors is, because it's a deep topic that it's to get some idea is important. And so intention is the first of the five forces. So what we need to do is to set the intention to actually direct the mind with the four immeasurable attitudes. And the second one is to become familiar with these attitudes. And one way of becoming familiar with these attitudes and the familiarity with meditation is on page 7. And to see what the definitions of meditation is in Tibetan, to become familiar. And in Pali, it's to cultivate. So the idea is to become familiar with the attitudes by becoming familiar with them, cultivating them in practice, and seeing that there are two types of meditation, the calm concentration meditation, stabilizing, which is the type that we just did very briefly, and analytical meditation, which we'll do on the attitude equanimity, which is tonight. And there is in the paper on page 6 about with the understanding the mind and mental factors in terms of how they have met neuroscience, and in the meeting of neuroscience, the richness of that collaboration has identified, as the quote is there, that neuroscience have monitored the brain activity of meditators and revealed that sustained meditation affects the neuroplasticity of the brain. You've probably heard of that term, neuroplasticity, forging new neural pathways that make it easier to generate concentration and positive emotions like compassion. So that's why the interface between Buddhism and neuroscience brings an optimism or a confidence that transformation can be attained. And as I've said on page 6, that back in 1997, so that's near 30 years ago, isn't it? That there's been this collaboration from the Mind and Life Institute that the Dalai Lama established. And I don't know if you've heard of the Mind and Life Institute, and it's just as amazing organisation. And that working with some of the same neuroscientists have been working with that since it was established. And this is the very clear that how you use your mind changes the brain and establishes new pathways, and you can get transformation, which is a wonderful thing to really appreciate. And Mauto Ricard, who wrote the book back in 2008, The Art of Meditation, Mauto Ricard is the one in the picture there, and he's actually been very influential in the whole movement of Buddhism and neuroscience. And he says that meditation is a practice that makes it possible to cultivate and develop certain basic human qualities in the same way as other forms of training make it possible to play a musical instrument. Who here plays a musical instrument? No, you used to. And you did training, didn't you? Or to acquire any other skills, so sport, technology is a very current one, how to use AI, that sort of. So developing a skill requires training, and meditation is a form of training that we need to do. And so that is why the importance of the analytical meditation on the attitude, which tonight is equanimity. And it's also meditation with the calming meditation is actually a way then to develop at the same time an awareness of what is going on in your own mind, and awareness to be able to use these attitudes. So it's using both types of meditation in what we're trying to do. Yes, it's the way a drop of ink can colour. So I found this, and that's true. That's fun. Yes. So what we have in the handout, which you've got, is a whole variety of other information, which is establishing some of the basics about and the importance of having the interface between neuroscience and Buddhism. And when we're looking at these attitudes, to have some understanding of what mind and mental factors is. So you can get from the idea that, like ink colours, water, what we're trying to do is to bring a particular direction to our mind. And we don't use the analogy of the sky and ink, because that's not, you know, that wouldn't apply, because the sky of the mind is vast, and across it goes a range of other factors. It's quite complex, the levels of the mind. So I'll just leave it there. So what we do is we start with equanimity, and equanimity is in your handout on page 10 and 11, but you can take it home and read and get and see where we're going with it. But the one version of equanimity, and again, the Four Immeasurable Attitudes is quite a lot of versions, says, once freed of attachment and hatred for those close and far, may all sentient beings achieve extraordinary happiness, etc. So that sort of implies that equanimity is a basis for the development of the other attitudes, particularly loving kindness and compassion. And so that's where we're starting with equanimity. Some versions will put equanimity first, but a lot of them put it as the last one. But I like putting it first, because without equanimity, it's very, the other attitudes don't become immeasurable, because immeasurable is what the equanimity is, the basis for the three attitudes to be immeasurable. And it works with our perspective and the perspective of others, using three specific afflictive mental factors that will apply. So these specific factors of attachment, aversion and ignorance, mental factors that we apply from our own perspective, and then we try and understand them from others' perspective. And we need to direct our mind with equanimity for happiness, but to get the balance and calm that we need. So equanimity is, the meaning of equanimity in Pali is to see, the ability to see without being caught up by what we see. And if you think of your own experience, in a day, you sort of, you know, be going along, you'll be maybe in traffic, in a shop, at work, with friends. And sometimes, can you feel for yourself that what you see, you get caught up by it? And being caught up is mean that you label people and situations like, don't like, and don't care. And since I've been doing this, I've just come to notice people's language, and a couple of my close friends who will use everything from I hate my ex son-in-law to I hate the colour of the bathroom. And they were actually examples in the last few days. So that our habit of labelling things can go from a person to the colour in your bathroom. Like, you know, that's sort of a pretty kind of indication that we can get caught up. And if we're getting constantly caught up all the time, and particularly by people, because people are the ones we probably, you know, get the emotional reaction to, then our mind is like a roller coaster, isn't it? You know, saying like, dislike, don't care. And there's no balance or calm is there, if we're continually being caught up? And the way that Buddhism can help us understand being caught up is by those three labels of like, dislike, don't care. So if you unpack those three labels of like, what's the afflictive emotion behind it? You know, attachment. If you don't like something, what's the afflictive emotion behind it? Anger and aversion, yes. And if you don't care, then what's the ignorant, the affliction behind that is just a general ignorance, a sort of not knowing, not thinking through that, you know, these people don't care. Well, how do we know that, you know, there isn't, you know, we're all interconnected in some ways. So being caught up is really important to start to get an awareness of how you get caught up and how you label in your day-to-day life. And if we're in uncertain times means, you know, everything from, you know, what's happening in Gaza to America to pollution to etc. You know, that are, we have more and more examples of how you can get caught up. Would that be right from your experience at the moment? Yes. So we get caught by our afflictive mental factors, what is called the discriminating thought, that we discriminate on the grounds of like, dislike, don't care. And so equanimity is what we call an antidote to the discriminating thought that takes us away from the roller coaster ride to having some more calmness and balance. And that's why calm was specifically the first word in the title, Practices for Uncertain Times, is facing uncertain time practices for calm. That, and the importance of equanimity as being the factor to provide that calm, that balance. And I like the imagery of the balance there, because all the different colours that make up the balance can be all sorts of different, you know, factors and ideas and feelings, emotions, mental attitudes. But working with equanimity, you can calm all those the discriminatory thoughts into a balance. It doesn't mean to say that they all disappear. It is to say that you can, with awareness of your thoughts and what you then say and do, with that awareness, you can achieve more balance and calm for yourself. You see the importance of the attitude of equanimity and in doing that. And the way that Buddhism then leads us through to understand our practice of labeling and like, dislike, and don't care is to use people, because, you know, what the whole goal is here is to work particularly with people in our lives and then extend it out with an attitude of equanimity. And so what are the three different sort of labels for people that we have? Friend, stranger, and enemy. An enemy is a kind of a heavy word, but it's the traditional word, so I have still used it. And here we use it in the sense of, you know, someone, a disliked person. And if we think about a friend, what we do with the friend, we hold them close with attachment. But what we also have with that attachment, it's a bit of, at times, a bit of a clinging attachment. And what we can do is to also think about, well, what those people do for us, and have the sort of our ego involved too. So it's not, and so that's why if we think about the attachment we have for friends and analyze it a bit, as we're going to do in the meditation. Is it a clean, clear attachment? And what we say, well, we need to make sure that it's not a clinging attachment, and move away from the word attachment and look at applying the word loving kindness, which is a positive mental state. Attachment, if you think of it, can be not a positive mental state. So that's with friend. Then with the stranger is, you know, we hold with ignorance, or indifference is also another way of talking about it. Oh yeah, they just, you know, the, you know, people I see around, don't think much about, don't sort of care much about. And with that ignorance, it's sort of, you know, looking to move more to, you know, a patience with all people and compassion. And I have just realized that under stranger it should be moved to wisdom, and under enemy hold with anger, move to patience and compassion. I will change that in the So I did this, of course, to be an example that, you know, presenters are not perfect, and they also have sort of, you know, distractions and things going on in their life that lead them to, not be able to not put the right label in their PowerPoints. So with strangers, yes, it's moved to wisdom. And when you get to enemy, where you hold, distance with anger and aversion, why I always like to say, well, what you're doing there is to move to patience and compassion, is to it's very hard to move directly to, if you have strong emotion, it's hard to move straight to compassion, that you want to, move to patience first, forbearance, and then to compassion. So, and people are reading this, yes, so that's okay for me. We get just, yeah. So I have in the handout to, put, more detail on what we're trying to do here, and just to go through that, we start with this as the basis for, loving kindness and compassion, be immeasurable, look at our perspective and others, and we're trying to, the ability to see without being caught up by what we see, and what being caught up means, and people in situations, and the labeling, the whole labeling. And just to ask you before we get on to the analytical meditation, which hopefully will make this all a bit more clear, is, would you reflect on your own experience, and do you reflect that you do labeling, like that of, saying, oh, I like that, or don't like that, or
every moment.
Right. Every moment, right, okay. Yes. It's sort of it's a bit sort of like when the mirror is put up to you to say, do you do this labeling? It's sort of, oh my goodness me. So so it's really great that you have recognition, awareness of that, because that's what we're trying to do, develop awareness of the situation that we want to apply equanimity to. And when we say that our perspective, we put the mirror up and we say, yes, I do that. Imagine everyone else's perspective, you put the mirror up, that they would say, yes, I do that too. So it's trying to understand that if we work with equanimity and we become more balanced in our calm and calm in our attitude to others and overcome the discriminating thought, imagine what that would be like if people like Netanyahu had equanimity more in their mind and had at least some understanding, or world leaders will stay without identifying individual. If world leaders and influencers and heads of environmental companies, etc. So that's when we say the other's perspective, trying to realise the importance of this attitude and how it impacts and creates uncertain times, because it's an attitude that we realise that, others don't always have, and we really need to, wish that they did. And others who experience in a really hard way, like the people in Gaza or the people in Sudan, where there's terrible things happening, or the people who, don't have housing down in, the parks in Brisbane.
And, I think that's probably the most important group, is this indifferent group. Because when you look at the friends and the loving kindness, even that is loaded with attachment. It can only have a negative outcome if it's not checked and dealt with, let alone the aversion one, it's probably easy.
Well, we start with the awareness of how we're thinking and how the outward expression of that in our own homes and in our interactions with others is where it starts. Yes. And, this thing, we have to start somewhere, and you're here, so you're starting somewhere. So that's great. Rejoice. Yeah. One of the four immeasurables, rejoice. And one of the easiest things to do, you rejoice, all of you rejoice being here, and there you are. You're directing your mind with one of the attitudes. So, and appreciate that for yourself. Good. Any other comments or how that resonates for you? Or
yes, I feel like compassion has to also be, I don't know if you can put them in order. But I see what you mean. We're just learning them in order.
Yes. Yes. It's in the order that, is where equanimity is first, yes. Well, we might do the meditation now, which is the analytical meditation. And one of the intention to direct your mind with equanimity is one part of, the doing an analytical meditation. It's also to gain familiarity with the attitude. And the third of the five forces is, third and fourth ones is around our actions of what we need to adopt and what we need to let go of. So that's also, comes into, doing the analytical meditation. So the important thing with the meditation position is the spine, to have a lovely straight spine. And if you need something to support your back, something like that, that's important, because I like the idea of you've got a golden thread that's been pulled up by the heavens, the Buddhas in the heavens, to support you to do the meditation. And eyes, you can either have them closed or sort of just a gentle gaze, as I said, down the nose is how they say to do it, and soften your gaze. And just bring, first of all, attention to the rhythm of your breath. Just be aware of your sitting here in the Gompa. Just aware of your breath, so that the breath can be an anchor as you settle your mind in this present moment. And resolve to keep your mind focused on the meditation, and gently let go of thoughts I'm not related to the meditation as you go, but with kindness to yourself. And we generate the intention to do this meditation on equanimity, to develop ourselves with a state of calm and balance that will benefit ourselves and all other beings. Because within equanimity is an essential basis for the cultivation of loving kindness and compassion. Equanimity is the wish, may all beings abide in equanimity, free from bias, attachment, and anger that holds some close, others different, distant, and others with indifference. So we need to reflect on the way our mental states of attachment, aversion or anger, and ignorance or indifference lead us to apply to people the labels of friend, enemy, and stranger. But we'll use in the meditation not enemy but disliked person. So from your own life, bring to mind three people. First, a person you like, a friend. And imagine this person sitting in front of you to your left. Now think of a person you dislike and imagine this person sitting to your right. Then finally, a person you have neutral feelings for, a stranger. And this person is in the middle of the other two. Do your best to keep the visualization going of these three through the meditation. First, focus on your friend and ask yourself, why do I like this person? In your reasons, can you recognize some are about what she or he does for you? Is there attachment involved in your attitude towards this person? A clinging from what they do for you and your happiness? And now think, look at the person you dislike and examine your reasons for feeling this way. Why do you dislike this person? Are there reasons to do with your ego involved, such this person has harmed you or behaved in ways that you don't like and find unacceptable? Reflect on this. And then look at the person you feel indifferent or neutral towards, the stranger. Why do you feel this way? Why indifference? Is there some ego involved there as well? That the person has done nothing to help you or harm you? And then considering the friend, disliked person, and the one you feel indifference towards, do you regard these relationships as permanent? Do you feel that you will always get along with the friend? That you will never get along with the enemy? That you will always be distant from the stranger? Consider from your past and how relationships have changed their label over time. So focus on your friend. Could they do something that you don't like or isn't harmful? That would change the mental attitude you felt towards them to aversion? And with the person you don't like, could they do something to help you, support you? And would this change your attitude towards them to one of like? And with the person who's a stranger, so-called, this label could go either way. They did something unexpected to help you, or they did something and said something rude to you. Your feelings and attitudes towards this person would change from maybe some level of attachment to aversion. In reflecting on these labels, we need to acknowledge impermanence. And consider from your own experience how things in life arise and pass away. Joy and sorrow comes and go. Pleasant and unpleasant events, people, and even entire civilizations. All is impermanence. And so too are these labels. None of these people in front of you have a stamp on their forehead, do they? With the stamp friend, enemy, or stranger. And other people will apply different labels to them. Now, where do these labels come from? What are the mental attitudes behind these labels arising from a discriminating mind? They are attachment, anger, and ignorance. Attitudes that are all causes of our suffering. But fortunately for us and our karma, these harmful mental factors are also impermanent. We can apply antidotes and they can change. And one antidote is the attitude of equanimity. And with the intention for us to apply equanimity as a way to direct our mind, we silently repeat these words. May I be free of discriminating thoughts. May I accept the impermanence of things. May I see all the rising and passing with equanimity. May I have balance and calm. May I be free of discriminating thoughts. the harmful attitudes. May I accept impermanence and change. May I see the arising and passing of all things with equanimity. May I have balance and calm. To be free of the harmful attitudes, to accept impermanence and change is in the nature of things. To see the ups and downs of life with equanimity. To drop our labeling so that we can abide with balance and calm. And for a moment, feel the resonance of those words and breathe in and out deeply. And around your heart as you breathe, open up that area with light and with warmth and energy. So you develop the intention, develop the attitude of equanimity. And this is from our perspective. And if we think about how we view others and the perspective of others, the reality is that the three people of friend, enemy, and strangers also are caught up with their discriminating minds, are caught up with the labeling of others, of friend, enemy, and stranger, just as we have labeled them in that way. These people have the disturbing attitudes of anger, attachment, and ignorance, which we know are causes for suffering. And thinking like this, we wish for each of these three people that they developed an attitude of equanimity for their benefit. And that they develop an attitude of equanimity for the benefit of others. So breathe deeply around your heart area. And as you breathe deeply around there, fill with the intention to extend equanimity to these three people. Send warmth and energy and light of this attitude to them as you wish. May you be free of the harmful attitudes. Be free of discriminating thoughts. May you accept the impermanence and change of all things. May you see the ups and downs of life with equanimity. May you then abide in calm and balance. See these three people and really send them warmth, energy, and light of the attitude of equanimity, and wish them, may you be free of harmful attitudes and discriminating thoughts. Be free of your habit of labeling. May you accept impermanence and change of life. May you accept the ups and downs of life with equanimity, so you can abide with balance and calm. And if we consider the subjectiveness of these labels, friend, enemy, stranger, and the discriminating attitudes behind them, we can realize that in uncertain times, these discriminating attitudes and labeling will become potentially stronger and more pervasive, and apply from labeling individuals to entire regions and countries. So we open up our hearts with equanimity as an important attitude we must hold in these uncertain times, so that we look upon all beings with more equal regard, with balance, and without labels. So we can expand the scope of our awareness to all those around us, people, groups, community, whoever comes across the space of your mind, direct warmth, energy, and light from your heart with the attitude of equanimity, and send to them the attitude of equanimity, and wish, may you be free of harmful attitudes and discriminating thoughts. May you all across the world accept the impermanence of things and change. May you see the ups and downs of life with an attitude of equanimity. May you abide with balance and calm. Send out the wish that all peoples, groups, communities, the three people in front of you, whoever comes to the space of your mind, we send out to them the wish, the attitude of equanimity, that they be free, may you all be free of harmful attitudes, attachment, hatred, and ignorance, May you accept how things are impermanent and change. May you see the ups and downs of life and direct your mind with equanimity. May you direct your mind with equanimity and abide in balance and calm. Now take a moment to imagine, really feel and see that you are sending this sense of balance and calm with the wish of equanimity to the entire universe, the entire world, all peoples, all beings, a huge, amazing, wonderful warmth and energy and light comes from your heart and is sent out to the world with your wish. May I send out and be a cause for calm, balance, and equanimity to the world for the benefit of myself and all others. May there be calm, balance, and equanimity in the world for the benefit of myself and all other beings. And from your wish that you bring that, may you have the wish, may all beings bring calm, balance, and equanimity to the world for the benefit of all. We send out from the perspective of ourselves and for the perspective of all beings. May there be calm, balance, and equanimity in the world for the benefit of all beings. And then feel the warmth and energy and light come back to your own heart and warm and strengthen your own determination to develop equanimity and direct your mind with this attitude. Which means dropping the labeling, dropping the discriminating thoughts, and abiding in balance and calm with all, including yourself. So in closing the meditation, bring your attention back to the breath for a few moments. Letting the phrases go but holding the attitude of equanimity in your mind. And when you are ready, take a deep breath. Inhale through the nose, exhale through the mouth, allowing all tension to release. In your own time, gently open your eyes. With the determination to carry balance and calm into your life. Feeling like moving around or jigging around or standing up, that's all perfectly okay. So I'll let you just process the meditation, because sometimes you're sort of kind of, your mind is processing quite a lot and trying to think, you know, what does it all mean? Yes, that's exactly right. The equanimity is the base for developing bodhicitta. It's one of the, it's the baseline, it's the first step you do, because it's about leaving nobody out, and at the moment we leave a lot of people out for various reasons, and that's to get the awareness of that sort of, you know, what we do. And as this says, looking at the five forces, the, you know, the sort of trying to pay attention to the mental attitude behind the labels and become familiar with the antidotes to apply to, you know, the attachment, aversion and ignorance that we so will you just come with the labeling. And so equanimity is an antidote to apply, one of the antidotes to apply to that same thinking, oh, half a tick, attachment, you know, how am I working there? What balance am I bringing? What calm? Aversion and ignorance, aversion and hatred or anger, well, that's never going to calm the mind. That's never going to be in balance with that. And ignorance, well, you're never going to make the effort to overcome those mental attitudes and overcome your indifference if you don't become familiar with what's going on at the broader level and with the attitude at, you know, at this level, and developing the intention to direct your mind with equanimity. That's, you know, that's why Buddhism says intention is the most important mental factor, because how you direct your mind, you know, with good or evil or neutral, is what your experience of life is and what people's experience of you are. And then the action of, you know, what we think with equanimity, and then what we do and say, and trying to work out what to adopt and what to abandon. And that, you know, equanimity in uncertain times, we had the practice challenge, and probably heard the term, the three doors. That's sort of what Buddhism calls, you know, mind, your mental factors, your body, what we do, and your speech, what we say. Yeah, so that's what the three doors are, you know. Yeah, so it's quite a, you know, it's quite a good analogy again of, you know, what comes out of your mind through the door, what comes out of your, with your speech through the door of speech, what comes out with your body through the door of body. That's where all your actions come from completely. And it's about, well, knowing the benefits, to know that if I practice this, I will have more calm, kindness and compassion, that I will reconnect with myself, enrich my interactions with others, nurture my resilience. And that's a really important one in these times, that if you're not going up and down the roller coaster, there's no resilience there if that's the ride you're on. And then, you know, help to embrace genuine happiness by having more calm and balance in your mind with equanimity is one way. Obviously, we'll be looking at with the other three attitudes other ways. So is there any questions or comments people would like to make? thoughts that arose, or with the meditation with it.
Find if you don't see anyone as an enemy anymore, like you just don't feel any attention for anybody, your life is a little more calm. You still have the people that you love and the people that you're different to, but if you don't think anyone's an enemy, that's a lot calmer.
Yes, yes. Yes, it's that's why, you know, you can think in other fields of, you know, watching the news, whether, you know, oh, I don't like what that person's saying or something, that's where it's more likely to come up when, but rejoice in the fact that, you are a lot calmer. And I think even with enemy, it's still the whole thing of, you know, the person versus their behaviours and their attitudes. You still have to respect them, and from the Buddhist point of view, everyone has Buddha nature.
I was reflecting on a story I knew about a Rinpoche that I know who, you know, when Tibet was invaded, his mum threw him on a horse and they escaped up into the mountains. They ran away, you know, and I thought there would have been great angst and fear, and you wouldn't be using equanimity in that circumstance. I'm not trying to be provocative. I'm just trying to, in my own mind, understand is there a place where we don't use equanimity? I didn't know serious circumstances.
Yes, yes.
I'm just playing with that idea in my head.
Well, that's a very good point, and it reminds me that probably it would have been useful for me to say it earlier, that the four of them, so with the four, the why there's a fifth week, it's about how the four work together. And the reality is they're kind of like, for want of a better word, a menu. And depending on your dispositions, depending on your circumstance or situation, one or other will be more relevant or more appropriate to apply and than others. And so even in the difficulty of people leaving Tibet and those situations, the extraordinary example of some people of the compassion to their invaders and oppressors is still amazing.
And those nuns got out, and then they went back
started protesting. Yes, yeah. And it's complex, though. Those situations are complex because the Dalai Lama will, you can read the Dalai Lama reflected that the invasion of Tibet was also karma. And it's a very complex thing, but you could say in some ways it's also our karma, because as the Dalai Lama himself says, that if something like that hadn't forced the Dharma out of Tibet, it would probably never have reached us. And so if you look at the history of the Dalai Lamas and that, when they had both the political and the religious roles, you know, they were doing things with Genghis Khan and the Khans and all of that. So there's karma involved. And so I guess in complex situations like that, it's that you need more than just these attitudes. But these attitudes can, particularly loving kindness and compassion, is basically suffering and happiness. the two sides of the coin that the Dharma is all about, really, to promote happiness as the purpose of life and to overcome suffering in all its forms. So, but it's good you're thinking about it. That's, you know, that's the important thing, the developing some awareness of these, where these factors fit in and what, but the importance is about you yourself directing your mind with these attitudes, because I think as the very So in uncertain times, what we can control over, have control over and transform, are the attitudes we bring into everyday life and the actions from them. Basically, that's what we're trying to do with this course. And in uncertain times, there's a whole lot of factors going on. But ultimately, that is all we can have some control over.
Thank goodness.
Yes, yes. So we can have control over something, and that's why, you know, it's ingredients for our own happiness, peace of mind, and we can act as an example to others and, you know, as we'll do with loving kindness next week, our kindness to others, you just think about it, your kindness to others is like a loop. You know, kindness to other and kindness will often come back to you, which strengthens your kindness. So the developing these attitudes that we can control will have an influence for others, because it will influence what we say and what we do. So. So, well, thank you all, and we dedicate our merits for being here tonight, and we recognise and rejoice that being here tonight, making that decision, is you have directed your mind with, you know, these attitudes to be a benefit to yourself and others. So rejoice and go forward and reflect during the week how you may apply some of these in the coming week in what you say and do for others. And rejoice and wish to continue to be a benefit to others. And I hope to see you next week. And next week will be, so next week, sharing any reflections, the weekly agenda that I put up, and the attitude is loving kindness.